Let's go back in time for a brief chat about one of the great moments of his career.
We need a theme for this, Hutto.
Probably a bit late now, around 20 to come up with a theme.
A jaunty little tinkling ivories theme. Well, we wanted to talk to you tonight, Mick, about Tom Hafey. We're at Richmond Collingwood game. They were, of course, two of Tom's clubs and one of the all-time great coaches. You played under him and at a time when he was at the height of his powers as a coach.
Well, yes, but not at Richmond. I played under him at Richmond, but according to them, not at his heights.
Well, we know
but, I reckon he was.
Well, it was the start of their downfall, probably allowing him to leave, wasn't it?
No, because we ended up playing finals and won a premiership, so not quite. But Tommy was Tommy, and my take on Tom, once he lost confidence, or one person in particular lost confidence in him, Tommy just couldn't cope with that and said, well, look, you know, because that's the sort of bloke he was. It was all in or nothing. The great thing about it was, people maybe not understand this, but I was cleared on the 28th of June.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm just having a look
here. I think it's the 28th of June.
So your first season is Richmond 1976, and you've debuted for Richmond in round 14.
Which was July, was it? Well, it makes no difference.
Would have been July, yeah.
Yeah, but my first game was over in Adelaide. I got cleared on the Monday, jumped on a plane on Tuesday, flew to Adelaide where they played this Mickey Mouse competition. We played Swan District, so you got a Western Australian side and Melbourne side playing in Adelaide. So when the ball went over the fence, the boundary umpire wouldn't jump the fence. There's no one over there, so the players had to go across and get it, because who's going to go?
I remember that competition. It was about it involved VFA sides played in it
today,
as well.
Yeah, well,
it's a bit of an FA Cup type feel, was it?
Whatever it was, Moons, it was on the Tuesday night. We got back on the Wednesday morning, and we played. My first game was on the next weekend.
So, how pivotal was Tom in getting you to Richmond? And tell us about your sort of first dealings with him.
Yeah, I don't think he had a. He may well have been told about it, but really, the bloke who had the biggest influence to get me to Richmond, and it wasn't because, hello, here I am, I'm a great player at St Kilda, and I'm holding out. No, I am that naive about this. I had three phone calls in the space of a week, and I remember talking about it and thinking, well, there's three clubs, and one was Richmond. And I'm thinking, what are they inquiring about my health for? You know, I wasn't exactly setting the world on fire. And because I had multiple knee injuries at St Kilda in that year. I played my first year, got through the finals, did a knee 6 weeks out from my second year, did the same injury the next year in the first round, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so the persistence was from Richmond, Paddy Ganane in particular, and then Alan Schwab, the great Alan Schwab. And so I said, look, I hated Richmond at the time. I really did hate them, and I couldn't stand their players. I didn't know them. I got there.
Why'd you hate them?
Oh, because I don't know why I hated them. I just didn't like St Kilda. There's only 12 clubs, so it wasn't either.
Well, as long as it was rational.
I was a Collingwood supporter until I played in the back pocket for St Kilda, and I think a bloke called Mickey Bone decided he wanted to have a blue, which I took him on, and then there's a big stream of cans come over the fence, and I thought my love for Collingwood dissipated very quickly.
Just while you're talking about that, did you play in the John Greening game?
I might have been out of the side.
Well, Collingwood St Kilda's relations soured notably after that.
That's right, it was always, then it was just like, well, they hated each other anyway, because, you know, the Saints had played off in the grand final in 71. But getting back to it, so I got cleared, and when I walked in the rooms, the three people that came across to me, or four people came across me, Royce Hart, Kevin Bartlett, Kevin Sheedy, and Francis Burke, I changed my opinion immediately, because they were just, I was just a commoner. Mm. They're royalty, and they come in and they just shook my hand and welcome to the football club. Along with Jim Jess, Ian Scrimshaw, Robinson from Carlton, and Lynch from Footscray, I think it was. And I thought, how good are these blokes? They don't have to do this. They introduced me to the gym. They showed me the gym. The last bloke that touched those weights would have been probably Jack Dyer. Because even the big medicine balls had dust laid on about an inch thick. The rooms were dreadful, but the atmosphere was outstanding. I learned two things about coaching in particular. There is more ways of winning than just one. Because Alan Jeans had taught me defence, 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 which suited my style. I got to Richmond. Tommy was, we'll kick 30, no side will kick 31. So it was just like, let's launch, which It started to peter out, though, that sort of game. But when you've got Royce Hart as a centre forward and you've got Michael Green in the forward pocket, not that I play with Michael Green, but and Barmy there, of course, get it in there, they'll kick the goals. If they don't, Bartlett will. Of course, when Green retired and Barmy was on the way out with his knee and so forth, then you lost that. So that big kick, long kicking game dissipated. But the thing I remember about Tommy most of all was Friday nights, I get a phone call and he'd say, Mick, we can't win without you playing well on this play tomorrow. You're going to be playing on him on the wing or in the centre or back pocket or whatever. I felt that good about it. I'm thinking, they need me. About 6 weeks later, I was in the showers, we were talking about all this sort of stuff, and the other bloke said, you had a phone call from Tommy last night? I'm thinking, well, I know I did. Did you? We all do. I thought, damn it, I thought I was special.
But was that his, do you think that was his great ability as a coach to sort of build players up and give them confidence?
Absolutely. You played for Tom. It was a half year. I had half a year and remained friends, I would like to think, for life. Mm. And because you, and the same with Jeans. Make no mistake about it. I had indifferent things with Jeansy from time to time, and particularly after I left there for about 5 years. I think he wanted to ignore me. Because all of a sudden I started getting in game and, you know, he was the one that cleared me. But the thing I was disappointed with Alan Jeans was he never told me why he cleared me. If he had have said it was because the club was in a bit of financial trouble, and we, in those days you get, not that we got it, you know, they'd sell you. And I think it was $40,000, which I'm still to this day thinking that's a lot of money for a back pocket in those days. But he didn't tell me until later.
Why do you think he didn't tell you?
I don't know.
Why did he when he told you?
No, I found out. I found out. And I really was disappointed. But nonetheless, then once I'd finished playing, I coached against Alan Jeans. And I believe firmly in this. I'm the younger. I'm the rookie. I would always go out of my way, absolutely out of my way, to hunt down Jeans or whoever, like Kennedy or Jeans or Brassley or wherever. Whoever was my officers and coach, I was the junior. You always go across and if you won, you were very humble about it. In fact, you sort of just bumped into them more so. But if you lost, you'd purposely go across and shake their hand and say, well done, because it's the right thing to do. And Jeans and Hafey were such a part in their philosophies, but wanted the same result. And that taught me a lot about my coaching.
Well, you coached against Hafey too. And Hafey, even in his last years as a coach, was pretty successful with the Swans.
Oh, absolutely.
Who was harder to coach against and why?
Look, this might surprise you about who's the hardest coach. The hardest coach is the one that's got the best side. Make no mistake about it. Because you can have a good coach with a dud side and you're going to beat him. You can have a coach that's not great at tactics or this sort of stuff and he's got a good side. They're very hard to beat because they've got a better side. Mm. So with Tommy, he was coaching Sydney with a load up of players that come from all over the place. And I know that because, you know, you've got Healy and you had Bolton and you had
Nagel.
Everyone. And that just created a very good football side. So they're hard to beat. Jeans went to Hawthorn and went through a period where they were in every second grand final, if not probably every grand final, won every second one. So both sides were... I always go by who's got the best side.
Was Tommy a good tactical coach, or was he just had his boys so fit and so strong?
Well, look, tactics weren't great in those days. I still remember running down the race one day at Arden Street, Alan Jeans was coach. Now, you've got to remember, Alan Jeans was viewed as a very good tactician. Running down the race, and on our board was our side. And I was on the wing, and John Manzi was on the other wing. Halfway down the race, Johnny Manzi said to me, oh, by the way, you're on Keith Gregg today. Not Alan Jeans didn't tell me. I won Keith Gregg 2 Brownlows. Because he must have seen me come out there and thought, well, there's Manzi on the other one. I'm going to take this bloke to the cleaners, which he did. He would have got 3 votes every time he played on me. And I tried to whack him one day and almost dislocated my elbow. And he said, you're not going off. I've got 3 votes coming.